It's 20,000 years ago. Our ancestors are hunting and gathering on the savannah. There are crude tools, campfires, and animal skin clothes. And it's not really the place you'd expect to find clues about the future of web programming. But they're here. And the next generation of websites? They'll use software based on lessons from this age. Coming up on the Sparkling Client Podcast.
Hello, I'm Eric Mork.
And I'm Monica Mork. We're Silverlight consultants and software enthusiasts. Welcome to the Sparkling Client Podcast. Sparkling Client is a podcast about Silverlight and other web client technologies. It's meant for developers and designers who are interested in making the next generation of great-looking web applications. Here's how it works. You give us 15 minutes of your time, and we give you the tools to build amazing web clients. For more information and show notes, see sparklingclient.com. Also, please consider leaving us feedback at the site. We're always looking at ways to make the show better. The Sparkling Client Podcast is brought to you by Silver Bay Labs, the consulting company that Eric founded. If you have need of professional services for Silverlight, ASP.NET Ajax, or related technologies, visit us at silverbaylabs.org. Each week, we cover a specific set of questions. This week, since it's our first show, we'll ask, what is a sparkling client? And then we'll ask, what's the big deal with Silverlight? Why are people so excited by it? Let's get started. Eric, how do our ancestors from 20,000 years ago give us clues about the future of web programming?
Well, I think that there is one very large clue that can help us with the future of web programming. Here's the problem with the current web. We interact with it, we click on links, and there's this pause, sometimes of hundreds and hundreds of milliseconds while we wait for information to come back, and nothing happens. Now, our ancestors hunting on the savannah knew something that we've forgotten. Things are supposed to happen immediately. When we yell to a friend, when we run over a hill, whenever we throw a rock, whenever we do anything, we expect that process at least to start immediately and for there to be immediate feedback. But that doesn't happen on today's web. People spend a noticeable amount of time waiting for their website. So that's, 100 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds. Not a huge amount of time, but this noticeable amount of time that they have to wait sort of breaks this contract we have with the past where things happen immediately. And I think this causes little pieces of pain in the user's brain every time they interact with a website.
So then, what is a sparkling client and how does that relate?
Right. So a sparkling client is a website that keeps this contract with the past. What it does is it reacts immediately to user input, and it has a tactile, an immediate feel that users like and users gravitate towards.
So how do you propose we make websites that react instantly?
I think what we can do is we can take advantage of a very key asymmetry in current web architectures. Here's the story with current websites. Traditionally, they're just HTML. Now, yes, you might use ASP.NET, or you might use PHP, or you might use Rails or something else to generate that HTML. But usually today, we generate HTML, we ship it down to the client, and the client spends time basically just rendering that HTML. So it doesn't really spend a lot of resources doing it. It just has to position and style elements. So not a super taxing process. Now there's the potential that we can better share the processing, that we can have a more dynamic web where the server does processing and the client does processing. The client does this sort of processing that makes users feel like they're interacting with a real immediate web application, something that's tactile, something that's giving them feedback, and something that's making them feel like they're interacting in a more intuitive way.
Okay, but if the user is usually requesting data from a server somewhere else, how does any amount of processing power on the client side affect how quickly we can get the data from the server?
There's a trick there, right? We have to pay the piper. We have to pay the price of getting our data. How can we get it any sooner? Well, this is kind of a trick. What we're going to do in the first case is that we're going to put up something immediately when the user interacts with our website. So if they request information by clicking on a link or pushing a button or doing something like that, and we don't have that information immediately, that's okay. We're going to put up a spinner. We're going to put up a progress bar. We're going to put up a loading message. We're going to do these things that make the user feel like I'm being interacted with immediately. Sure. Then we're going to go out. We're going to get the data. We're going to bring it back, and we're going to display it to the user once we have it. So it's sort of this two-pronged attack. One prong is that we give the user immediate feedback with a loading message or whatever. And then the other prong is we use good web hygiene. We have optimized SQL queries and the whole bit so that we can get the information to them very quickly.
Okay, now you mentioned there was a second case where things would be done differently. What's this other case?
The first case is actually the worst case, where we cannot predict the data that the user is going to be asking for. But what if we can predict the data? What if we have a hint of what they might ask for? What could we do then?
Well, we could get the data before they ask for it.
Right. Keep it invisible on the client process. And then if they do ask for it, boom. We present it to them, we put a bow on it, and we display it to the user in all of 10 or 20 milliseconds so that they have this immediate feel that something has happened to their interaction.
So how do we do that?
There are technologies, some that have been around for a while, some that are emerging, that allow us to do it. Two categories, really. The first category consists of basically JavaScript. Modern browsers aren't just dumb rendering engines. They also have this programming power where we can take advantage of JavaScript. We put JavaScript in our sites, and then on the client side, the browser interacts with that JavaScript, executes the JavaScript, and gives us something that looks more like a real application. There are some problems. There are some problems with compatibility. Everybody has a slightly different flavor of JavaScript or the underlying objects you interact with JavaScript, so that's a bit of a problem. But we'll cover that in future shows, and there's some ways to get around that. The second category consists of these things that are runtimes that get downloaded. So think Flash or think Silverlight. That's the new kid on the block.
So let's talk about Silverlight. What's the big deal with Silverlight?
So there's a huge deal about Silverlight, and there's new information that's going to be coming out very soon, and we'll do a deeper dive on the next show. But here's a prediction I'm going to make about Silverlight. It's going to fundamentally change the way we program on the web. It's going to change how the web looks. It's going to change how the web feels. Now, there are a number of reasons for this. We can't go into all of them. But in keeping with the theme of today's show, one thing to say is that Silverlight is great at sharing processing power between the client and the server. Right now, if you do ASP.NET programming on the server, you program in C#, or you program in VB, or you program in these different languages. And what happens is you build HTML to get sent out to the consumer, the client. In a Silverlight world, we can actually execute C# or VB code across different browsers, across different platforms, down on the client. So imagine a Mac running Internet Explorer or Opera, or we're not sure what the complete suite of supported browsers will be, but imagine executing Silverlight C# code on these clients. So we can share, in some case, refactoring and moving code directly from the server to the client. And I think that this is going to allow us to make the web a much more interactive, a much faster, and a much more useful place. Now, it includes other things. There are these things called XAML files that are XML declarative files where you can specify vector graphics and animations. And that stuff's nice, and I think it's going to be useful. But I think ultimately the thing that really is important to me is this ability to share programming cycles between the client and the server.
Thanks for that overview, Eric. In the next episode, we'll dive deeper into Silverlight and how it works. In the interim, how can people get started with Silverlight, and where can they find more information?
There are two places you need to go. The first one is the Silverlight.net site. That is the official Silverlight site. Lots of good information. Now, what we're talking about on this show is mainly Silverlight 2, which is under development and has not been released yet. The Silverlight 1.0 stuff is useful for some people, but not going to be useful for most people, is what we're thinking. So, for the most part, ignore the 1.0 stuff. Now, the other place that I can recommend highly, in fact, would be to subscribe to this podcast. We're going to have future podcasts about Silverlight, explaining how you can get started, explaining the nitty-gritty details of what it's like to program in Silverlight 2.
That's all we have time for this week. As I said, next week we'll be diving deeper into Silverlight, and we'll start showing people how they can get started. Thanks for listening to the Sparkling Client Podcast.